Welcome to this edition of Stoppage Time with Hayden Herrera. I'm Hayden. Glad you're with us for our first episode. And couldn't think of a better guest for the first episode than the man sitting next to me. Anchor for KNWA News at 5, 6, and 10, Matt Turner. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, I'm really honored that you asked me. I'm the first guest, is that right?
Yes,
on
first
guest.
On the
inaugural
yes.
podcast. That's an honor.
Yes, hopefully not. Buddy. Hopefully not the last.
Right, hopefully yeah. not. Hopefully.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but the first time we ever met, I think I've told you this before, I was right. in eighth grade, careers class, they ask you to job shadow somebody. So I'm like, I really want to job shadow Bo Mattingly,
right.
who was the sports guy at KNWA at the time. So me and my mom, we went here to KNWA, asked Bo. Bo was very nice, said, yeah, come by this day, just meet over here at noon, and you can hang out with me the entire day. So I'm like, yes, it's going to be awesome. So I get there at noon, and Bo is not there. I'm like, oh, gosh, what's going on? So I sit in the reception, this lady, she tells me to sit down. I'm there for like 45 minutes, and then there's a call at the receptionist desk, and she says it's Bo.
Uh-huh.
So I pick up, and I say hello. He's like, hey, Hayden, it's Bo. I was like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, I got some bad news. I'm not going to be there today. I was like, oh. He's like, but I tell you what, don't worry. You're going to hang out with Matt Turner today. I was like,
did you even know who I was?
Yeah, I was like, who is that?
Who is that?
Yeah.
What year was this, by the way?
This had to be 2004
or 5. Oh, that was like my one of my first years here, right out of college.
Yeah. So I think you get there a little bit later, and I still had a great time. You know, you showed me around and showed me the studio, and that was when I was first, you know, wanting to be a journalist. So,
see, I love this story because you know me that – In all honesty, I mean, I have the worst memory in the world. And I don't know if it's because I played college football and I got hit and I had concussions or I don't know what's going on, but I can't remember anything. So you have told me that story before and I have no recollection yes. of that day. So I was, when you told me before, I was kind of asking you, like, well, was I nice to you? How did I act? I don't even remember what you said.
It was fun. I think I asked you, I think I had a checklist that was required from the class asking questions about, oh, what do you do at this part of the day? Which is kind of – this is kind of an advanced version of this. It's kind of like a 2.0, this podcast. But we'll get to the college football in a little bit because I want to hear about that.
Okay.
But I want to hear mainly about the story of Matt Turner. Where did you grow up?
Born and raised in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. Small town, like 10,000 people.
Right.
And I've come to find out since I moved to Northwest Arkansas that – a lot of people aren't familiar with other parts of the state. You know, right. we still have a lot of people that live up here who have moved from, you know, different parts of Arkansas, but many, they have no clue where Arkadelphia is from. Right. They just know of Little Rock and Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. Most people just go to Tulsa to shop or whatever to fly out. But Arkadelphia is like an hour southwest of Little Rock. It's a great town. Washington Baptist University is there. Henderson State University is there. A small town and I really feel like it kind of molded me and made me who I am today, like just a great group of people who live in Arkadelphia.
Right. I've lived in Northwest Arkansas my entire life. I've never been to Arkadelphia before.
Exactly. You don't typically go through there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what did your parents do over there?
My dad was a longtime Baptist preacher.
Okay.
He had a lot of different jobs. He was, get this, I actually... When I was, I think, one or two, I lived on top of a funeral home in Arkadelphia.
Oh,
my dad was a part-time preacher, and he worked at the funeral home, and he embalmed bodies, and then he would preach the funerals.
It's like Dan Aykroyd and
My Girl. So they gave us a free apartment, and I have, you know, I told you before I couldn't remember anything.
Right.
I have like a vague recollection of the funeral home, like roaming the hallways with my dad at night.
Wow.
And we would go into each room where the caskets were and the dead bodies, and we would turn the lights out, and then we'd go back upstairs. And so my whole life growing up with my dad being a preacher, and he'd go to the hospitals and visit sick people and preach funerals, and always heard about death, and always at funeral homes. And it's like I really... It sounds weird, but I got used to it. Like, death is not a big shock to me.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and my dad would pass away later when I was 25 years old. Uh-huh. He was 49. He had leukemia.
Uh-huh.
And he died at a very young age. My mom, great lady, she raised us at home. and she chose to stay home with my brother and I, and she did a great job raising us. My dad was a great dad, two wonderful parents, and just two of the best people in the world.
Okay, and obviously sports a big part of your life,
yes,
too, football.
Yes.
What got you interested in the game?
Probably my dad. My dad was, it goes back to him, he was really poor growing up. He was kind of scrawny. He didn't mature until, you know, physically until he was older, you know, around 25 or so. And he kind of became a great athlete when he was in his 20s, just like church leagues and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So I think he always kind of wanted to live vicariously through me.
Right.
We've seen a lot of those kind
yeah.
of parents,
oh,
you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he pushed my brother and me to play sports, and he wanted us to be involved in stuff. And I was pretty good. I was a pretty good natural athlete and played all the sports. And then over time, I got pretty good at playing quarterback, also played some receiver when I was young. And then really I was best at playing baseball. I should have gone on to college and played baseball. But I love football more.
Right.
But I think my dad kind of got me into it, and then I really liked it. You know, I like to perform, I like to compete, and that was really cool.
So you're playing at Arkadelphia.
Yeah.
Arkadelphia High, is that
Yeah,
is
Arkadelphia
that school?
High School, just one high school.
Okay,
yeah.
So college recruitment
right.
starts coming along. Talk about the schools that came
not
along.
Not many. 10th grade year, we ran the triple option and didn't start. The coach's son started. He was a quarterback, but I got to play some my 10th grade year. Mm-hmm. Then that coach left. And J.J. Metters, a former Razorback, his dad was hired as our head coach at Arkadelphia. And so he wanted to throw the ball more. He came in. We started throwing the ball my 11th grade year. I had a pretty decent season. We went to the playoffs. But no real, you know, interest from colleges my 11th grade year until we started going to these team 7-on-7 camps. And, like, now, you know, every high school does that.
Right.
It's like, I mean, you do it all summer long.
Yeah, it's
like AAU
basketball.
It's a
requirement now.
But back then, I'm talking 1997, 98, there were very few team 7-on-7 camps. And we went to one at Louisiana Tech, and I just showed out. Like, I had the best camp ever. I was camp MVP.
What do you attribute to that?
I have no clue. I have no clue. I just it was clicking. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Oh,
we just
yeah,
went,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
and I was just humming it. I was throwing the ball, and we had a great camp. The only team I think we lost to was Evangel, the big team
right.
out of Shreveport.
Mm-hmm.
But after that 7-on-7 camp, I started getting letters from Louisiana Tech and Southern Miss and then some of the other Division II schools.
Okay. And Southern Miss.
Southern Miss.
Southern Miss. What made you originally go with Southern Miss?
Southern Miss. To tell you the truth, in Arkadelphia, all my friends or different people I'd known, I've watched over the years people who chose to, and this is ironic because I ended up going back there, but people who chose not to leave Arkadelphia, okay? They said, I'm going to go to Henderson State, and I'm going to get a degree, or I'm going to go to Ouachita and get a degree, and then they hung around Arkadelphia. They never left, and then I watched other people who left, and as far as I know, they were very successful. So I always felt like I needed to leave Arkadelphia to know what else was out there.
Uh-huh.
And so my dad and I went on a trip to Southern Miss. John Thompson was the defensive coordinator. That was a real tie. He was a coach at Arkadelphia years ago.
Okay.
And he was friends with my high school coach. And we loved it and talked to the coaching staff and committed there, went there. And I knew nobody.
Mm-hmm.
It was 6.5 hours away.
What city was that in?
Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Okay.
But – and so that was like the riskiest thing I think I've ever done, is just went, enrolled, played football at a place where I didn't know anybody.
Yeah, what was life like in Hattiesburg?
It was fun. Like, it was really, really fun. At first, you're a little bit homesick, but you know you're going to be. But the thing about it is I wasn't just your regular student who's going away to college where you don't – I mean, that'd be really difficult.
Yeah.
But you're going to play football – and people always ask me, were you in a fraternity or this or that? And I said, no. I've thought about it. You know, I thought about it. But football is a fraternity. And so I went there, and like anything, you know, it takes some time. People don't really talk to you a whole lot right off the bat. They got to have to get to know you. But eventually you make friends with everybody, and it becomes home. And it really was like one of the most fun years of my life in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. It was awesome.
And so you redshirted.
Yeah, redshirted, played practice squad against the number one defense. We were ranked 23rd that year in 98, and very few people knew about Southern Miss. We had guys who would sign with Alabama, Florida, Mississippi State, Ole Miss out of high school. They weren't very smart, so they'd go to JUCO, and then they'd come back and sign with Southern Miss. Mm-hmm. And we had all kinds of NFL talent, and I had to practice against them each and every day, and they just killed me. And I talked about the – I can't remember anything.
Yes.
There was no wearing a red jersey for the quarterback. Oh, man. They let them just hammer me, and I did that all season long. But it was okay.
I remember the story you also told me, too. Your team went to the Humanitarian Bowl.
Tell everyone about the
gift bag.
Gift bag. The gift bag. It was – we got – yeah, gift – to reference, people now, we're learning that when these kids go to bowl games, they get like PlayStation 3s,
Xbox,
they'll get like a
Rolex,
42-inch plasma TV as part of their gift bag. And I remember Southern Miss, we got to go to the Humanitarian Bowl, which is played in Boise, and we got a pair of Nike shoes that were yellow and black, like Southern Miss colors. We got the cheapest jumpsuit that I would be ashamed to wear in front of anybody. I don't even know where it is anymore.
Is that one of those you just give to dad?
Yeah. Just a horrible, horrible jumpsuit and then a cheap, really just a cheap watch and maybe something else. And I can't remember. Yeah. And that was it. As far as I know, Humanitarian Bowl may give out the same thing now. It's still kind of a crappy bowl.
Yeah, they got the blue turf to play.
Right.
But you did not complete your college
in
Southern Miss.
I was down there, and, man, I was loving it. I made a lot of friends, and it was really great. But, like I told you, there was so much talent there. And I was just a kid. I was 18 years old. And so much talent. And I was looking at the quarterbacks, and I'm thinking, man, I'm not going to play here. Maybe I could play here, like, my fifth year, after my redshirt year. But even that, I don't know.
Right.
And is it really worth it to sit on the bench? You got to weigh it. Is it worth it to sit on the bench your whole career and play for a Division I team and go to these cool stadiums or whatever? Or should I go back and just play right away at a Division II school? And I had a coach at Wichita Baptist in my hometown call me. He wanted me to come back. And so I made the tough decision. I went back to Wichita Baptist, played quarterback there with a guy named Kerry Wheaton. We kind of split time. And
could you see the talent level significantly?
Yeah. And I don't think the guys that I play with will even care if I say this because they know it. And Coach Todd Knight, the coach at Wichita, knows it too. He's done a great job to turn that program around. Mm-hmm. But when I went from Southern Miss, and not like I was the most talented guy in the world, but when I went from Southern Miss to being around all those guys to Wichita, it was a huge drop off, mainly size and speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell the story, we'd go to trips. We played at, teams in New Mexico and Oklahoma and all these things. And we always ate at Golden Corral. Oh. And I think on at least two occasions, the people at Golden Corral, or maybe it happened at a gas station one time, but they asked us, as we were walking around the restaurant as a team, they said, "Which high school are you guys from?"
Oh.
That's how little we look like a bunch of little guys.
Yeah.
And so I played at Wichita for that one year. I got hammered, killed. We got beat all the time. And then I said, you know what? I think I'm going to quit playing football. And at that point, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I had no clue.
What were you majoring in at the time?
I can't even remember. I think history or something. Whatever the easiest major was, I can't even remember.
Right.
Whatever the easiest thing was to get by, and this is just in all honesty, for football.
Right.
Because football is hard.
Yeah.
You're going at 5:30 in the morning, running, lifting weights, doing all this stuff. And I don't know how guys like Jake Beckett at Arkansas graduate in 3 years.
Yeah,
I mean,
insane.
Insane.
I don't have football. I don't know how he can do that.
I know. And they're playing at SEC level. At Wichita, even Southern Miss, we didn't have the film study and the stuff that the guys at Arkansas do. They're in there constantly. So I had an easy schedule, didn't know what I was going to do, but quit football. And then soon after that, I kind of found out what I wanted to do.
Okay, so can you remember when you first got interested in journalism?
Yeah, it was actually a guy named Dr. Jeff Root, and I've given him credit before. I went back to Wichita and spoke. But he's – and I think God puts people in your life. I know he does for a reason. And Dr. Jeff Root is a guy who basically told me to be a sports anchor slash news anchor.
Okay.
Like, he just told me.
Yeah.
He said, this is what you're going to do. And I quit playing football at Ouachita. And he said, you know, I've always thought – Jeff Root did radio play-by-play for the Arkadelphia football games that I was in.
Right.
And he was a color commentator for the Ouachita football games I was in. And he worked in the journalism department. So that's kind of – and he knew me. And he said, you know, now that you're done, he said, I think you'd be a natural fit at sports broadcasting. And my dad, I think my dad was a pastor, and I think maybe he thought that I had some speaking ability from
right.
my dad. You know, a lot of people say I sound and look and act like my dad. And I had no idea that I wanted to do it. And I said, well, I don't know. And he forced me. He said, let's try it. He said, I want you to host the Arkadelphia High School Football Coaches TV show. And it's like next week. And so I remember I was nervous. I mean, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I went and called my dad, and he said, you got to go for it, you know, do it. And sure enough, I did it. And looking back, I'm sure it had to have been horrible, you know, just
yeah.
horrible, horrible.
What was it, a coach show, just interviewing the coach?
Yeah, or? Interviewing the coach okay. and going over highlights,
yeah.
and, you know, and I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
But I kind of, you know, I'd seen coaches shows before, so I kind of just got through it. And then from there, the same professor, Dr. Jeff Root, asked me to do radio for Arkadelphia High School football and basketball games. And that's kind of when I learned how to just speak on the fly, which I think is a big, big thing. It's an important thing for sportscasters, especially really for newscasters, too. I mean, you got to be able to ad-lib, talk, think, speak.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people can't do that. And I learned how through a couple of years of just going on the radio, sometimes by myself. I would drive to some random town with a bag phone and like a headset in this weird contraption, and I would call in, and I would do a girls' basketball game, a boys' basketball game for like 4 hours, just me talking
right.
on the air.
Yeah.
And then also got a job writing for the local newspaper game summaries. So all three phases. I learned TV, radio, print, all in a matter of like a year and a half. And I said, you know what? This is what I want to do. I think I can be good at it eventually. I saw some potential there in myself.
Okay. So, and when you were doing all those three, did you know that, you know, TV is what you want to do the most?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I say that, but I think originally, and I know a lot of people in Arkansas probably feel the same way, but originally I said, man, wouldn't it be cool to be the voice of the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Right.
Like when I was calling those high school games
right.
and those Ouachita games that I got to do. But then I got an internship at Channel 7, the ABC affiliate in Little Rock. And that's when it hit me. I said, man, TV. TV is where I got to go, because I got to work with Paul Eales, the legend,
right.
and Steve Sullivan and Scott Inman. They were all in the sports department
right.
together. And I worked with all those guys. And it was so cool. You know, and I said, this is what I'm going to do.
So you get out of college mm-hmm. and you're looking for job offers.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have any before KNWA?
I lucked out. I mean, the whole thing is just pure luck. Right place, right time.
Right.
I was in college. I didn't know how difficult it was going to be to find a job. I wanted to stay in Arkansas. I didn't want to move off. A lot of people on TV have to move to South Dakota
yeah.
or some, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
small market.
Yeah, and they're making like $12,000 a year and they live in South Dakota and nobody watches them. Nobody knows where they're going. And I wanted to stay in Arkansas. And so I remember I sent a tape to CBS. I sent tapes to everybody. Sent a tape to CBS in Fort Smith, Fayetteville, and talked to Eric Sullivan. He was their sportscaster. And he said, man, I think I've got a job for you. I was still in college. He said, I think when you graduate, I can get you a job in Fort Smith as our Fort Smith bureau guy. And we talked all the time, and basically he kind of promised he thought it was going to work out. And then last second, the general manager of the TV station said, no, we're not going to even have that position. We're not going to have a
right.
bureau person. So I was disappointed. Well, then didn't know what I was going to do. And I was taking summer classes. I walked in May, graduated, taking summer classes to finish up. And I can't remember. I think it was like 2 weeks before I was done with my last class, and then I was out in the real world, Mike Nail called me back. The voice of the basketball
right.
Razorbacks called me back, He said, "Hey, Matt," he said, "I've got your tape up here, NBC, Fayetteville." He said, "I'd like to see if you want to come up and do an interview," you know, and I was amazed. And I didn't know how good I had it at that point. You know, this was a startup station, and but just to have the opportunity. So I came up here. I'd never produced a sportscast in my life. The only sportscast I had ever done at that point was one night at Channel 7 in Little Rock. Steve Sullivan hopped out of his chair after the news. He said, "Okay, sit down." He said, "Guys in the control room, roll on this. Matt's going to do the exact same sportscast I just did." I did it, and it was pretty flawless, you know, first try. And they said, "Well, that's great. Good job." I said, "Thanks." So they gave me the tape, and that was my tape.
Right.
That was the only tape I had. I had no experience.
Wow.
And so I sent that to Mike Nail, and then they had me read the sports up here, and then they hired me like a week later.
Wow.
And like right out of college.
Yeah, to get that from Mike, I mean, Mike Nail's the guy who called the national championship game.
I know. I got to interview him years later, and we talked about him hiring me, you know, and it was amazing. I got to work with Mike and with Paul Eales. I mean, very few people get to do that in Arkansas sports.
Right. So when you're in here, KNWA, mm-hmm. What's some of the first what are the first memorable assignments you had as a sports reporter?
Sports reporter. I'll tell you a memorable assignment in a second. The first time that I realized, wow, this is like a dream job, you know, and you take it for granted after a while. You mm-hmm. do it and it just becomes a regular job.
Right.
Is first day on the job. And again, I'm from Arkadelphia, and you grew up in Springdale. So
yeah.
You're used to being around the University of Arkansas, seeing, you know, maybe some players at the mall or going to more games than I got to go to. Mm. And so first day here at KNWA, got to go down and cover Hawk football practice and just walking on the field and just like, wow, this is my job now. This is my job. And watching practice, and then Houston Nutt comes up, and we all stick microphones in his face, and he does his thing, which we're all familiar with now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he says, "We bounced around, met, you know, da-da-da-da-da." And I was just – I was amazed that I was getting paid to do this. And it took a long time to kind of figure out how to be a sportscaster, and I'm still learning how to be a newscaster now. But first memorable moment – biggest story that I covered as a sportscaster, and it's what I think turned me into a newscaster, is the Nolan Richardson racial discrimination lawsuit in Little Rock.
Right.
I was a sports guy, young guy, from what I've told you, you know, didn't have any credibility whatsoever, and the station sent me down to Little Rock, and it was really good for me because my dad had leukemia at the time, and he was in the hospital, and he was very sick, and so I got to go basically live with my mom and dad in Little Rock while I was sick for a week, cover the trial, and looking back on those reports, I don't think they were very good, but at the time, the bar was set so low, you know what I mean,
yeah.
that nobody expected much from me,
yeah.
And so I was able to go in the courtroom every day and come outside, and my theory was, I don't know all the legal jargon, and I don't know, you know, I know enough, and I can read, and I can research, but my goal was to go in the courtroom, and this should be whatever reporter's goal is, but go in there, listen to what's going on, figure out what the most important thing is, you know, maybe there are like 3, 4, 5 points from that day, go outside, and then tell the public,
mm-hmm.
and I did that every day,
right.
And I was commended for it afterwards, and I remember the bosses really started bragging on me, and they took notice of me after that event. They said, you're more than a sports guy, you know.
So that's kind of how you started moving from sports to news.
Yeah, it was.
And then a job opening comes up for the news anchor here.
Right.
How many years later was
Let's see, they hired me as a sports anchor in August of 2003.
Okay.
And
did you ever have any...
They hired me as a news anchor in July of 2006.
Did you ever have any aspirations to doing news or just sports?
No. Sports only, and I think that's what everybody, all sportscasters dream of. But as I'm finding out, there are so many sportscasters across the country now who are now moving into news.
Right.
Because they figure out that you can typically make more money. You can have a longer career, and sports is in most markets kind of a young man's game, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a lot of competition.
Oh yeah.
And there are fewer, news anchors, these days for some reason. And so, but no, I had no aspirations. They came to me out of nowhere, I guess based off the Nolan Richardson thing. And they said, our news anchor has left, you know, and, we think you'd be good. And I thought they were crazy. Like, I don't know how I acted, really, but I wasn't I probably didn't act the way I should have. Like, I was honored. Or, I mean, I was trying to talk them out of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I said, are you kidding me? You know? And so I put on a suit one day, and I went out there, and I read the teleprompter, and they apparently a lot of candidates did, and they took all the tapes. They take them to a focus group of people. They watch them. They write down the people do what they like, what they don't like, whatever. And apparently, I won that little contest, the focus group contest. Yes. So then they came to me and they said, "We want you to be our news anchor." And I said, "Okay," but I still wasn't convinced. I didn't think people were going to take me seriously. And we actually negotiated a contract. We got into like heated contract
Ooh,
negotiations.
Juicy.
And
I was
just a young sports guy. Looking back on this, it's crazy. A young sports guy, and I hadn't even really had time to get good at sports, you know, at that job. And they were coming with this great job offer, and I was so convinced that I was a sports guy, not a news guy, that they had to talk me into it. And then money came into play, and I was like, well, goodness, if I'm going to give up the love of my life, sports, I mean, I got to have more money than what you're saying. And we went back and forth. And I think the bosses, they're not here now, but the bosses at the time were in disbelief. And they were probably thinking, like, who is this punk kid, you know? And anyway, we came to an agreement. And I tell you what, that was one of the best decisions and luckiest things that has ever happened in my life, to become the news anchor at a top 100 market with no experience.
So you can feel for the Darrell Revises of the world and the Pac-Man
right,
when they
right,
hold out.
Right, right.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I understand how that goes.
Okay, so you've been in the news, moving from sports to news.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of tell us what a normal day is like for you as a news anchor.
It all depends. Sometimes I get really busy. I remember when I first started out as a news anchor, I was very, very busy. I was really, really focused on gathering as many stories as possible and calling and doing all kinds of things and running down leads. And some of that stopped a little bit when I got really sick not long after I was named a news anchor.
Mm-hmm.
I used to weigh like 190 pounds, very fit, didn't even really have to work out, but just muscular, you know, in good shape, and then started feeling horrible. I dropped to 140 pounds. My dad had just died.
Mm-hmm.
140 pounds. I looked like a skeleton and could barely work, you know. And so I was on fire. I was feisty. I had energy. And then it all just kind of went away slowly. And turns out I had Graves' disease with hypokalemic periodic paralysis, a very rare disease. Nobody knew what it was, but I would wake up in bed completely paralyzed. I say completely paralyzed. My muscles would not move.
Wow.
You lose all the potassium in your body.
Whew.
So that happened like months after they named me news anchor. Mm-hmm. So you know those bosses are thinking, what in the world have we done?
Yeah.
We hired this kid. Now he's sick.
Yeah.
So I had to have emergency surgery, and then I had to recover. And so early on, I remember I would just beat myself to death, and I would go crazy. I was running around. I was doing all kinds of stuff. And then I kind of eased back into it. And now the health problems have still kind of lingered over the years, and I've tried to pace myself. And I try to – it's not a lazy day. I try to pace myself to where I don't kill myself. I've learned that if I don't get enough rest, or if I wear myself out mentally – that I'm really not worth anything on the air. And so a typical day now is come in, we go to a meeting, we talk about stories of the day, And I still make phone calls. We do stories.
This is like mid-afternoon.
Mid-afternoon. I write stories, rewrite stories, look at stuff, constantly researching, and then going over stories in the news, deliver the news, and we do it each and every day. And every so often now, I'll get to do a news story. We call it a package, a news story of my own.
Right.
And I think what I was referring to earlier is when I first started, I was so gung-ho that I wanted to do like my own package like every single day.
Right.
You know, and if I did that now, it would just kill me.
Yeah.
with the way my health is.
Yeah, combined with
right.
that, anchoring three
right,
shows.
Right, there, right,
okay.
Right.
Did you have someone in the business that you wanted to emulate whenever you started going from sports to news? Or maybe just even sports. You have anybody in there?
I'm opposite
okay.
of most people. And I don't even know if I can tell you who they are. I don't emulate anybody. I try not to. To me, that's like a huge turnoff when I hear somebody and I know they're trying to sound like somebody else.
Right.
I don't like that. Just be yourself. Talk. Here's what I think. When you go on the air, be professional. You want to be a better version of yourself, a more professional, better version of yourself. But don't be a different person.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's just like if you're making a cold call for a job interview. That's how, you know, you want to be a professional,
right.
better version of yourself. You know, hey, I'm Matt Turner, da 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 da, and friendly and nice. I don't emulate any broadcasters. I respect a lot of broadcasters, but I see some that I look at, and this is what I'm saying, it's a different way to look at it. I watch some people or hear some people, and I take mental notes. I never want to sound like that.
Right.
Like, I do more of that than trying to say I want to look or sound like that guy. It's more of, please make a mental note never to do what that guy just did.
Right. I find when I don't know if this happens with you, but when I'm watching the news, I can't barely focus on the actual news. I'm watching everything that, you know,
right.
the technical aspect.
Because, well, you now work at a TV station.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm seeing like how the anchor's reading
right.
the story. You can tell sometimes if the prompter's
right.
slow or fast.
And this is what they say, and it applies for both of us now. When a news story is really good or a newscast is really good, people like us who work in news won't even notice like the technical stuff. We
right.
won't even pay attention.
Right.
We'll actually focus on what's being said in the stories.
Yeah.
So that's what you want to achieve each and every night.
Right.
You don't always do it, but
oh no.
Yeah. You know.
Okay, now, some people, you know, out there, they have the view that, you know, Anchorman is one who makes a lot of money, very famous, big-time
right.
celebrity. What part of that is not true?
All of it is not true. here's the thing. Back in the old days, you had three channels, okay? You had ABC, CBS, NBC, and people had rabbit ears. They had an antenna on top of their house. And so you had three channels, which means – if you lived in Little Rock, you lived in Fayetteville, you had three local news stations, and those were the only three channels you had. So you picked basically which news channel was your favorite.
Mm.
And even if you didn't have a favorite, you flip around, you could only flip around so long,
yeah.
1, 2, 3, 1,
yeah.
2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So anybody who was on TV was a superstar. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And the ad revenue was so large at that time because you didn't have – I mean, now we have 2,000 channels.
Right.
So every business advertises with cable and Dish and DirecTV and then with the local TV stations. And, you know, the advertising dollars are spread out. The economy's bad. Back then, ads cost so much money, and you had to get the best people on TV because you only had a few channels. And, yeah, those were like superstar people, and they made a whole lot of money. But as we got more channels and as we got the internet,
right.
It diminished. I mean, internet people like bloggers are now some of the superstars.
Yeah, they're putting ads up
right.
on there.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. When in your lifetime have you been the happiest practicing journalist? Has there been a time like, man,
in journalism?
Yeah, just there's
happiest.
Been a period just you've been like, man, this has been a great run I've been having. Any time like that, or is it
yeah,
just kind of?
It's been well. It's been on different levels when you say it that way. Happiest in journalism. I'll give you a few levels.
Okay.
is when I interned at Channel 7 Little Rock, and I was truly friends with Paul Eales. And I know Paul made everybody feel like a friend, and that's why he was so great. But I was truly friends with him, truly friends with Steve Sullivan, who I think is a legendary sports anchor, and very good friends with Scott Inman, who I think is an awesome broadcaster and maybe, you know, the next voice of the Razorbacks someday. There's been a dispute over whether it should be Scott or Chuck or, you know, even now. But that was, like, really inspiring. It was a great time in my life. I would drive to Little Rock every day from Arkadelphia, and I would hang out with these three men. And we would go hang out with Jermaine Taylor. We'd go to different coaches and interview them. And just the camaraderie and learning the business and basically learning how to be nice to people, that you don't have to be rude in this business, which I already knew that anyway. But that was the mountaintop early on. You know what I mean? I was like, this is great.
Right.
Second would be when I was in sports and Bo Mattingly was hired here at KNWA. Mike Nail left. They hired Bo. And Bo taught me, I didn't know anything. He taught me how to be a television sportscaster because I didn't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just kind of winging it. And he taught me, and we butted heads for a while. And Bo and I are best friends, but we would fight. And he would call and apologize. I'd call and apologize. And we got into it all the time, you know. But then we'd say, well, I love you, man. It's okay, or whatever. It was the weirdest relationship. But he truly taught me how to be good at my job. And at one point, it just kind of clicked. And I became a pretty good sports broadcaster. And I can't give you the exact date, but I know when I felt comfortable.
Yeah.
And it was because Bo was working with me. And I know when I felt comfortable, I was like, you know what? That's when it hit me. I could maybe move up, go to a bigger city. I could do this for a living. I could be pretty good at this.
Things just kind of.
Right. And then the rug is swept out from underneath me. They say, we want you to be a news anchor.
Yeah.
So like I told you, so then, you know, I thought I was on the mountaintop, everything was good. And then everything happened with the illness, and it's taken years to get back to getting healthy. And I think just now as a newscaster, I'm going to a new doctor in Dallas. They've got me on new medicine, hormone replacement therapy. I'm just now starting to kind of get evened out. I have a great wife, Julie. We're expecting our first child.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. In December. And I'm starting to feel like I'm getting in my groove a little bit. So those are the three phases. There was the mountaintop, the awesome experience, the feeling comfortable, feeling like I belong in sports, and then now feeling like I'm starting to get pretty good at being a newscaster. I still have some off nights. A lot of people do. But I feel like I'm getting in my groove. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I could see me being a newscaster for years and years and years to come because I'm learning new things every day, and I'm practicing basically consistency is what I practice now. I want to be consistent, not make mistakes, and still be entertaining, enjoyable to watch. I think that's something that people overlook. Anybody can go up there and just read the words.
Oh yeah.
But you've got to make people want to watch you read the words, you know, over the other people.
Do you ever think about going back to sports ever again, or do you think you're set?
Oh, yeah, I've thought about it, but I'm very happy where I am now, very happy with the job I have now. But, I mean, yeah, I don't think anybody would tell you that started off as a sportscaster, went to a newscaster. You know, Dan Patrick, he did that. He was in news. He went to sports and stayed in sports. Keith Olbermann I think he started in news, went to sports, went back to news. He's switched like 100 times. Okay. So Bryant Gumbel, the same thing. Mm-hmm. He's been in news and sports. Mm-hmm. It never leaves your blood. So yes, I would always love to go back to doing sports, but probably not in this market. It would be like a Dallas or like a national market, you know, but I don't even know if that'd be a possibility now.
What person has been the most fun to interview in your career?
Most fun to interview would be Reggie Herring.
Reggie Herring. Defensive coordinator.
Former defensive coordinator for the University of Arkansas.
That's interesting. You could have given me a million guesses and I would
Reggie
have
Herring
said.
Was the most fun. He is the craziest, strangest coach I've ever been. I've been around a lot of coaches, and he is a nut bag on the football field. I mean, he cusses and he doesn't care. He goes all out. You know, he says it all on the football field. He goes nuts, and then he has this weird relationship with some reporters. He was good friends with Bo Mattingly, and I was always with Bo. We'd interview him. He'd step into the room with us, and he would, like, give Bo a hug. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, a drill sergeant.
Yeah.
And he was cussing out the players, and then he'd come in, he'd give Bo a hug, and he'd make these little jokes. And Reggie Herring has these two little, like, lap dogs, these little white puppies, I think. He used to, at least, at home. He's got two personalities. So we'd go interview him, and we'd get a little bit of both. During the interview, we'd get the drill sergeant, and then he would go back to the softy Reggie Herring, right, and then he would always tell jokes, and he was just a fun interview.
Oh, yeah, I would have never expected that.
Yeah, who would you have guessed?
Oh, I don't know. I guess you've interviewed Nolan. I guess he wouldn't be the
Nolan is
interesting,
not the most
interview.
Yeah, interesting,
but
is different. Yeah. Nolan is very interesting. Yeah. The most fun, the one that cracks you up the most,
okay.
Reggie Herring, yeah,
okay,
for sure.
Okay, so I want to talk a little about just the journalism business.
Mm-hmm.
Working at KNWA, what is success in this business? What, I guess, maybe from meetings with, you know, the higher ups here. What are we looking at for success here? What are we seeing as success here at KNWA?
Well, it's a little bit different at KNWA,
okay,
because the company we work for, Nexstar, does not subscribe to the Nielsen rating,
okay,
system. And the whole company doesn't. So we can't look at the Nielsen ratings and gauge our success like other TV stations can. Something else that's a little bit different about this market is, years ago, corporate made the decision to just cover Northwest Arkansas, not cover Fort Smith and the River Valley as,
right,
much, unless a big story is happening there.
Right.
So even if we catch a glimpse of the Nielsen numbers, like in a published report in the newspaper, and it says what the ratings are, we don't even know if they're true, because, well, they may be true, but we don't even know who in which part of the state submitted those diaries to Nielsen, because,
right,
we know for a fact that nobody watches us. Very few people watch us in Fort Smith. So,
right,
judging success with our company, I think, is doing your best every day. And this sounds corny, but just doing your best every day, performing every day, having clean, crisp shows that inform people, they entertain people. You're not just boring them to death. They, you know, connecting with people in the community. And the way I gauge it is when I go out in the community to some of these events, and I'll go MC stuff by myself or with Neely. And when I first started here back in 2003, 2004, nobody knew who I was.
Right,
you know,
right,
you didn't know who I was when you came here for the thing. And now that's not the case. You know what I mean?
Right.
I have a lot of people everywhere I go say that they watch our station. They love our station. So while we can't go by a rating system, I go by what walking around the mall tells me.
Okay.
And I don't go looking for that.
Yeah.
But I've noticed there's a big difference now. And I can tell that our TV station is successful. And it's not to say we win every story, we win every night, but we are becoming successful just by what the viewers are telling us.
And I would say social media has got to
help. Oh, yeah, yeah. Social media is the same way.
KNWA Facebook page.
Yeah.
You got your own personal Facebook page.
Yeah.
So I guess that's another way to, you know,
right,
you get feedback.
Yeah, you get feedback now. And that's a good thing. A lot of positive comments, you know, come our way. And so we've had more positive comments at the TV station than negative, it seems like, over the last several years. And I think our team, we have a great team in place. And you know when you're putting a good product, you know, together. And some nights it's not so good. It's shaky. It's not very good. But most of the time, we have a pretty good newscast, you know. And I think the people in Northwest Arkansas like KNWA from what they tell me. So that's all I can go by.
Do you still get nervous sometimes going on TV, or is it kind of?
No.
No?
Not in a long time.
Okay.
There have been nights when I have been, and this hasn't happened in a long time, but when I've been really, really sick. You know, I told you I have
right.
illness issues. And Actually, there was a while where I had to go in the restroom and basically vomit 15 minutes before the newscast.
Right.
I was nervous. I was shaky because I was so weak, almost flu-like, and I was nervous about going on air. Like, am I
afraid the viewer would see?
Yeah, am I good enough to fake this? You know what I mean?
Right.
Can I pull this together? And I've done that a lot around here when I was sick. You know, just pull it together, do the news, then you can collapse later. And I've been nervous a few times. Like, okay, can I look like a professional newscaster and fake this for a second while I really just need to go vomit? That's happened before. But typically, no. I've gotten comfortable with it, and I think that comes with time. You know.
Okay. What do you think you'd be doing in life if you weren't doing this journalism thing?
The two things that I thought about in college, the reason I wanted to be a sports broadcaster after the professor told me to be is because I knew I still wanted to do something with sports. And I thought about being a coach, but I was really worried about being a coach because it's kind of the same as this business. Like, you can be a coach, but unless you're a really successful one, you have to move. You could move your family all over the place every few years. Mm. I had a friend whose dad was a coach, and they moved all over Arkansas. And, you know, a lot of times you don't make very much money on the lower levels. Successful ones, they move too, but they make millions. But I decided against being a coach. I just didn't want to do it. And so I was thinking about, like, being a sports agent. I thought about that, or sports medicine.
Okay.
And so. And I think being a sportscaster seemed like it was easier than all of those.
Staying in the sports.
Yeah. So I said, family. I'll do this.
Okay. I want to go back. You mentioned earlier your family. How excited are you about fatherhood?
Very excited. I was nervous. Well, I take that back. I was nervous for just a little while. But Julie and I have been trying to have a baby for a long time. And she's got a blog and she writes about this. So I'm comfortable talking about it because people know.
Right.
And it is a strange subject, infertility, because I think years ago, women didn't talk about that. You know, if you had trouble having a baby, you just didn't say anything.
Right.
And now, with the internet and blogs, and some of these girls and women are coming forward and they're sharing their stories, and it's kind of inspirational to others, and they can compare notes and find out which clinic they go to. And that's what Julie did. When she was having problems with it, she was on a blog and she read about some other women who were going through the same thing. And it was a long process and it was very taxing. And they had to give Julie all kinds of hormones, and we went to all different doctors. And at the same time, remember, I'm sick this whole time too.
Right.
I'm very sick with the Graves' disease. And so we went for, you know, a good year and a half. Trying all sorts of things, traveling the country with her. And then finally we got to St. Louis and we did IVF. That was the last solution to the problem. We'd done everything before then and it worked. And so we were so excited that it worked, you know. And then couldn't believe it. And then I got a little nervous that, oh no, what if it's, you know, what if there's a problem or whatever. Well, we got past that phase and everything looked good. And then, for some reason, Julie had me believing that we were going to have a boy the whole time. She told me we were going to have a boy, boy, boy. So I always thought we would. Well, then we go in for the day that we get the ultrasound, and it's a girl. And I'll be honest with you, like, I was very happy, but I got kind of nervous because I had trained my brain to raise a boy.
Yeah, you had a son.
Yeah.
And
almost like I didn't know how to handle a baby girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you hadn't already bought the football.
Right. Exactly. And so I got nervous about, oh, no, I'm going to have a girl, you know. But I've really – that changed quickly, you know. And I'm already in love with her. And she'll be here December 3rd or sooner, Presley Bell Turner. And we can't wait, man. So this – right now – there's been a lot of turmoil in my life with my dad passing away and my illness and then Julie's infertility. But right now, everything's coming together, and it's a really, really good time of our lives right now.
Well, it's perfect, perfect reason to have you on the show. Now, say in 15, 18 years, Presley says, it shows an interest in journalism.
Yeah.
What would you say to her?
That's funny, because my co-anchor, Neely Jones, her dad was a news anchor.
Right.
And Neely followed in his footsteps.
Right.
And I don't know. See, I would bet that she would not want to do this simply because my dad was a pastor, and nothing against pastors, and I'm a Christian guy, and you know, but I just did not want to be a preacher after watching my dad. I don't know why. Some people do. But I have a feeling that after watching me do this and then be at work till 11 o'clock at night or whatever, I may miss out on some things or whatever. She may not want to. If she does, though, I'm going to tell her to study. I mean, the most important thing you can do is study. And that's, I think I've kind of left that out of the whole thing, is I try to read as much as I can. And I always have, when I was in college or whatever. And even if I don't know everything there is about news or sports or whatever, I know a little bit about a lot of things.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so if she was going to be a journalism student, I'd say, look, it's going to be tough. If you want to get in sports broadcasting, be a sideline reporter. Obviously, we've seen that they have success. But if you're just going to if you're just going to be a journalist, read, know what you're talking about, because it'll come in handy. You know, that's with anything too, I think.
Oh yeah.
I think if you can read, if you can read and you're well spoken, you can go very far in this country. Even if you don't study. I've learned that over the years by watching people.
Wise words.
Yes.
And on that note, we've almost gone an hour here.
Have we really?
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, we're hitting 52 minute mark. Matt Turner. Give us your plugs. How can we follow you on Twitter?
Plugs. Okay, Twitter is it's kind of stupid because everybody took up the Matt Turner
kind of
name.
Common name, yeah.
Yeah, I was
so
late.
Who's got Matt Turner? Who's got the?
It's well, there's some clown over in England or
oh,
somewhere.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. Go Twitter. Go at Matt M-A-T-T 2 underscores Turner. So it's Matt. Two underscores Turner.
Okay.
That's Twitter. And then Facebook, it's Matt Turner Anchor. What is it?
On Facebook.
Facebook.com/ Matt Turner Anchor.
Or they can just type in Matt Turner on the pages. Okay.
Exactly. Just all right. Google. Just Google all of these, and I think you will find.
And you tweet a lot. I see.
I do.
I enjoy your tweets.
I do.
During
and I'm
off.
About to start retweeting your podcast
Thank
now that
you.
You're on Twitter.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We appreciate that. But yeah, on that high note, Matt Turner, I think that was a decent show.
That was a good, very good first show.
I hope people are still listening by
I'm
now.
I'm sure they're bored with all my stories, but here's the positive, okay? You have all this on record, and so years from now when they fire me and they have to bring out the cake or whatever, you know,
right.
At the party. Or if, you know, whenever I pass away, then you play this bad boy.
Yes.
And it's ready to go.
Yes.
So you got an hour on tape of Matt Turner ready to go. I need to tell my mom who to contact.
Okay, yeah. We'll get the whole family involved. All right, Matt Turner,
right,
thank
brother.
You very much.
Thank you, Hayden.
And thank you for listening to the Stoppage Time podcast. Be sure, next episode, we've got Adam Goldberg, one of the producers from the ESPN Depth Chart series.
Cool.
You watched that. What'd you think?
Oh, my goodness.
We're taping this on a Wednesday night.
Yeah,
and,
Depth Chart was amazing. I thought that Garrett McGee, Arkansas's offensive coordinator, really showcased his talents, like his intelligence, his coaching ability. Garrett McGee will not coach at Arkansas next year. He's going to be a head coach.
You heard it here first.
Based off of that, it's unbelievable. Off of that one episode on ESPN, behind-the-scenes footage, athletic directors across the country are going to see that and say, wow, I want him to be my head coach.
Nice. Heard it here first, folks. McGee might be on the coaching, mm-hmm. might be on the coaching carousel soon. And on that note, we thank you. Next episode, Adam Goldberg, he's going to talk about what went into the decision of putting Arkansas on this year of the quarterback. You may be interested to know that they were not the first choice. So we'll hear all about that and what went on behind the scenes during their days in Fayetteville and what they thought of it. So until then, this is Hayden Herrera on Stoppage Time, and we'll see you soon.